The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. Episode 22 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. My name is Jason Bryant. Today we're joined by 2008 Olympian and three-time All-American at the University of Michigan, Andy Rovat, and with All-American Mike Powell, the assistant coach at Oak Park and River Forest High School in Illinois. Our topic today, we're going to be discussing distractions, and that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, but we're going to get an insight and a take from an athlete's and coach's perspective, as well as a competitor's perspective, and what we can do to deal with our own distractions, and then what we can do in coaching senior level athletes and kids through their own distractions. And, first of all, I'd like to thank Andy and Mike for coming on. Andy, welcome to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, in case you're wondering, folks, that crying in the background isn't Andy's facial hair, because he shaves it every now and then. That is Mike Powell's 9-month-old. He's a proud, as he says, part-time, three-quarter-time stay-at-home dad. He's an assistant wrestling coach. I can relate to the stay-at-home part of it because I'm working from my home right now. But first thing, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on our topic today, because there's a lot of distractions and you've got some interesting experiences with this.
Well, and I think it's a pretty, I think there's a lot to it. But in my experience now as a coach and looking back at my experience as an athlete, and I think a lot of times the best wrestlers in the country, are doing the right things off the mat, aren't necessarily the best wrestlers. You know what I mean? But it's about who's putting their lifestyle, a good kind of a winning championship lifestyle together with, great training and great outlook and obviously the ability to compete at a high level. But, you see so many kids who you think are going to be outstanding, but they're not doing the right things off the mat, and they go, and I see it from 8th grade to 9th grade and then from 12th grade into freshman year in college. And those guys, the guys that make it, I think, are the guys that long-term are able to keep their personal life pretty disciplined or at least compartmentalized really are able to focus on the things that are important, school and training. And I have some personal experience. I was a freshman All-American at Indiana and get progressively worse at wrestling because I really kind of fell back on my teenage years of kind of being wayward and using drugs and alcohol and really fell off. So it's a pretty cowardly thing, but, I try to be honest with my guys and tell them about my experience and what coulda, shoulda, woulda, and then, don't be that guy. So.
Yeah, Mike, we'll talk about those experiences just a tad down the line. Both of you had experiences on a Big Ten campus, and this isn't something that's aimed at Big Ten schools, because every campus, no matter big or small, at least on the college level, is going to have a certain level of distractions. I know I went through them in college, even though I wasn't an athlete, but a lot of my roommates and stuff, they had to deal with the same thing. And Andy, since I guess you're more fresher on the scene, you're around college campus a lot more than Mike is, and you're head coach at the Cliff Keen Wrestling Club there in Ann Arbor. When you stepped onto campus coming from Lakewood and in that powerhouse program at St. Edward, which is a Catholic school, and there's some rigid requirements there and a kind of a standard that you guys have to keep. When you first stepped on a campus as, your first day as a freshman in Michigan, I mean, obviously there had to be all sorts of things that were going to pull you away from wrestling. And how did you fight through those your first year in college?
Well, I mean, personally, you know, for me, you know, going to college was about wrestling. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know what I wanted to study. I just knew that I was going to the next level, and that involved wrestling. It was wrestling that was paying for it. So that was my main focus. You know, everything I did revolved around that, and the decisions I made revolved around that. I made my class schedule around it, you know, my sleep schedule around it. Everything I did was around wrestling. So I also went to Michigan with the expectation of starting as a true freshman. And so, you know, I approached it, you know, as, you know, my season's coming up, you know, September school starts, and, you know, I got dropped off. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of distractions in the beginning of the year with, you know, being away from home, having no rules. You know, I was able to go to class wearing whatever I wanted. You know, there was a lot of things that were different. There were girls sitting next to me in class, you know, coming from St. Ed's, we had none of those. But, you know, for me, it was easy to, you know, make the right decisions, you know, based on the fact that, you know, wrestling was important to me, and I knew that it was, you know, paying for the school, and it was the reason I was there.
Yeah, Mike, I'm going to go back in time, and, you know, as far as when you enrolled in Indiana, obviously Bloomington and Ann Arbor both have kind of raucous college environments, and, you know, how did, you know, with Andy's experience, that's what he went through. What was your mindset when you stepped on campus?
Decently disciplined for a couple of years there, but, you know, I had kind of turned my teenage years around to finally wrestle my senior year and, you know, earn a scholarship. And so I did pretty well the first couple, but, you know, it's like anything else. If you don't have the right priorities, and I think probably the values, it's easy to get distracted, you know, it's all over the place. So, you know, I partied my fair share and did my fair share of probably ill-advised things, but I, you know, never missed a workout, and, you know, was ambitious. And that was kind of like what Andy said, that was my first priority. It didn't, like, for me, things didn't really fall apart until, you know, I guess I faked it for a couple of years. So,
you know, my own experience is I turned 18. 3 days later, I was moving into my dorm at Old Dominion, and I remember one of the first, you know, first week of school. You know, we're you know, I'm hitting my first kegger. We're, you know, going from house to house and things of that nature. And, you know, it was, you know, I'm kind of outing myself here when I say this. There was time didn't go on very long until I had a fake ID. And I'm obviously doing the things that, you know, as not an athlete, but a lot of college kids are doing. And I know from a non-athletic standpoint, it disrupted my academic progress. Obviously, I lost my academic aid and spent years fighting to get that back, you know, right at the ship. But, you know, it's real easy to kind of get away, even when you're around athletics and you're driven, it's, you know, it's almost tougher to stay away from the drugs and the alcohol in some campuses than it is to stay on the straight and narrow. Andy, what were your experiences with, you know, potentially, you know, having, you know, there's obviously opportunities for you to say, all right, you know what, I'm going to go out tonight. I'm going to do this. And how did you basically fight to stay away from those things that would potentially end your career?
Well, I mean, you know, for me, like I said, you know, my number one priority was, you know, to go in there and wrestle. And I was 18, you know, as a true freshman going in. I turned 19 halfway through the season. You know, but I had, you know, good role models on the team. You know, if I would have came into Michigan maybe a year or two earlier, the culture wasn't the same as it was when I entered. You know, I might have been pulled down another path and, you know, had other choices that were presented in front of me to make. But when I got to Michigan, you know, I come, you know, the end of October, you know, nobody was supposed to be even drinking. So, you know, you come in school, you have a month to settle in and have fun. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, a dry season from October all the way through the NCAA championship. So, you know, I really wasn't even exposed to those situations because, you know, for me, it was a norm, you know, and then the following year, you know, I wanted to build on the success that I had. And, you know, by the summer of my sophomore year, I started having aspirations of, you know, being on World Olympic teams after I went to my first national team camp before the Sydney Olympics, you know, so from the start, you know, the norm for me was not making those bad decisions and you know, putting wrestling is a top priority. You know, and not a lot of people will say this, but to me, it also might have hindered myself a little bit because I really wasn't living. You know, I was too focused on one thing, and I wasn't getting out and getting some more experiences. But over time, I you know, fixed that, and I had a better relationship between my personal life and my, you know, wrestling life. So, you know, in the end, that's when I really started to flourish. And but that wasn't until after college and, you know, with the World Olympics.
Yeah, and you spoke about role models there. That's something that every wrestling room has, whether or not they're utilized, that's another story. But, you know, in your role, your situation, the way you explain it is like, all right, you know, you set a trail, and how, you know, people could have reached out to you or you could have reached out to them. What is it about having somebody that does the right things that can be infectious, that can lead people to be like, you know what, I need to follow what Andy's doing because he's having success. I need to, you know what, maybe I might show up for a little bit, but I'm not going to drink. You know, it's a dry season, follow the team rules. Did you feel that being that role model really helped bring the guys around you and make them better? I mean, there's always the saying that does that, but what, when that was put into practice, what did you see when people maybe started following your lead?
Well, I mean, it wasn't me. I was, you know, the person I was looking up to when I was a freshman was Otto Olsen, you know, so I was following his lead because, you know, he had done it before and he was a captain. I think he was 3 years into his 6 years at Michigan, but, you know, I'm sitting there following him because he's the one who's going to go the farthest that year, which he ended up taking second in the NCAAs. But, you know, pretty much when you have those role models and those people that are, you know, doing things against the norm in the right way, they are essentially laying down the expectations because, you know, a lot of times when you don't have the right culture in a program and you don't have people making the right decisions, it's because the people who are supposed to be the leaders, the coaches and the older people on the team, they don't lay out the expectations correctly so that everybody knows what they need to be doing, what their goals are, and how to fulfill their obligations to the team.
Mike, when it comes to your experiences, when did things start to go off the rails a little bit? I mean, what was the scenario that you know, you said you didn't miss workouts, but obviously your performance suffered. What were some things, obviously, at the time, you may not have been, you know, fully aware that this is going to affect my performance, but, you know, looking back on it, do you know that you can point to a point in time where you're like, all right, this is where things started to go wrong?
Yeah, the week after my All-American as a freshman. So I skipped school for the week and went to Florida. And you know, did unsavory things, and then you know, from there I just kind of, you know, I was not an Andy Rovat competitor. You know what I mean? I'm not. You know, I think Andy's famous for being able to, you know, step on the mat and believe he could beat everyone. For me, I needed to do everything right. So once I started doing things not right, you know, really kind of falling off, you know, I basically broke myself, you know, and gave myself a reason to not win and not compete hard. And, you know, I was one of those guys that would win or lose every match 3-2 because I wouldn't try any moves. And, you know, you see those college guys all the time. And, you know, you wrestle a 45-minute goal in practice, and all of a sudden, rather than scoring a whole bunch of points in practice, I'd just make sure I won, you know, make sure I had more takedowns than the other guy, you know, whatever. You know, they just, you look back and you know, you talk to your athletes who are going on. Devontae is at Michigan, so Andy knows him, you know, and he's heard all this stuff from me. But, you know, for me, it was right after my freshman season, my redshirt freshman season. And I, you know, things, you know, you start making excuses for yourself and you do a whole bunch of weak things, and it's all kind of connected to this idea that down deep, I knew I wasn't doing things the right way.
Now, when you look at that, obviously, so it was right after your freshman year, you're All-American. Do you think that sometimes, I guess in your case, maybe this is a yes, that the, you know, immediate success or being good allows you to cut those corners and say, you know what, I can do this because I'm that much better than everybody else? Or was it early success, you know, maybe gives a false sense of security? Because in college wrestling, you medal once, even the best guys have a hard time making it back on that podium again. So, you know, how do you teach your kids to deal with success and not let it go to their heads, and where doors open that these type of negative influences can come their way?
Well, that's a complicated question, but I think there's, you know, each individual psyche obviously is different. For me, it was you know, like again, I said, I had to do things. I had to know I did things right so that when I walked out on the mat, because I had performance anxiety issues. And, my freshman year of college, at the NCAAs, I was just, man, it was the hardest I'd ever trained. It was the best I'd ever eat. I slept, no drinking, everything. And I walked out on the NCAA floor and I was like, man, I'm going to place. And I wasn't seeing, I knew that I was going to beat guys. But that's just kind of how it was for me. In terms of, that's about all I can say. For that, I don't know that I could speak to anybody else. But I got a little big-headed, I think, and let myself start to slide. And it's a slippery slope if that's something that you already have done in the past. For me, I'd already done in the past. And frankly, I think I showed my true colors at the time. I think I was narcissistic and I was weak. I don't think anybody, you don't hear people say that. But the truth is, I wanted to be a national champ as bad as Andy did. I wanted to be an Olympian as bad as he did. I just wasn't tough enough to maintain the discipline enough to do that. And the irony here is he mentioned Otto Olsen. I was beating Otto Olsen at the Big Tens that year. He completely broke me and pinned me. And I'm telling you, nothing against him. I mean, his work ethic is famous. You hear about it throughout the Big Ten. And I hosted him on his recruiting trip at Indiana. The guy went for a run while we were waiting for the car. After we went out to dinner for the steakhouse, he ran around the block like 5 times. And I thought, who's this weirdo? Unbeknownst to me, he was going to keep running until he beat me. And I don't think that dude could have beat me in any other sport. If he would have made up the sport and made up the rules, I probably would have beat him. And I don't think he was much of an athlete. And I was a very good athlete. But the difference is in the sport of wrestling, it's about, long-term toughness and discipline. And like Andy kind of said, doing things right all the time. I remember Otto wrestling as a true freshman. He was in me. And then my career, he was such a serious. And I remember thinking, how is it possible that this guy beat me? And at the time, but it's an interesting story. Like two guys going two different directions. I think, like I said, you see that all the time with kids. You hate to say it, nobody talks about it, but you know what happened when you see a kid wrestle in high school and he's an unbelievable athlete. He's, training wrestling. He's doing all the things he could be successful with in college. He's powerful. And all of a sudden you don't hear about him anymore. There's a bunch of those kids in the last couple of years, but it's almost always lifestyle.
As we get into the coaching aspect of it, obviously, Andy, you're dealing with adults now. I mean, you're coaching at the senior level. You had spent time coaching at Michigan. You're at the Olympic Training Center, and there's obviously different athletes with different ideas of what training hard is. Now, as you're coaching, and you've got a pretty regimented system that you and Jake are doing with the base wrestling thing, and really growing wrestling nationwide with that system, but. When it comes to dealing with adults who, they're old enough to drink, they're old enough to make their own decisions, they're not impressionable young college freshmen, what is the discussion from you as a head coach of the wrestling club there to make the right decisions, to try to make a world team, to make an Olympic team? What are you telling these guys now as adults?
I mean, that's one thing that I'm, really getting at. So when I first started training people, I really wanted to make sure I understood, the best ways to physically train them, and to give them the proper rest that they need to be able to function and do it over and over again. And then, now, this past year, I learned a lot of lessons to not just physically train them, but then get the message across and the different areas of the tactics and strategies of the sport so then they could, focus on succeeding in the best areas that they need to when they go compete. But the last thing that I wanted to get into was the mental aspect. And, there's a lot of things that I do and that, the athletes have to do to mentally prepare for their next tournament, their next competition, their next, training cycle. But, the one thing that I realize is that everybody's in the sport for a different reason. I also train a youth club team. I coached a Michigan club team. I coached a Michigan NCAA team during the spring and summer. So I'm coaching every single level of the sport. And the different reasons people are in a sport are they want to have fun. They're doing it because their friends are doing it. They just want to do an activity, as like a cross training for another activity that they enjoy doing. Or they, really want to compete and win. And once you find out why the people want to do it, it's easier to help them make the right decisions to achieve that goal that they want. And so for me, I'm training people who tell me that they want to be World Olympic champions. So I'm not going to ever hold anything over their heads. You know, so part of the practice I have is I say, okay, well, I'm going to run you guys through this. This is what you have to do. Now I'm going to give you some stuff that you go do on your own. And whether you do that on your own, that's your choice. And so, like, I had an athlete who was here before, and, you know, he didn't really want to be the World Olympic champion. He was here training, but I knew he didn't want to. And so I never forced him to make those decisions to say, okay, well, Kyle, you don't have to, you can go out on a Friday night. You know, it's not going to hurt you training, or, you know, he never did crazy things, but, like, you know, he enjoyed himself. He had fun. He was learning. He was being part of the team because, you know, he wanted to coach, but at the end of practice, he wasn't doing the extra stuff that, you know, I suggested to the team. But with his actions as a coach, I could see that, you know, he didn't want to win. But now if people are making those right decisions and they are pushing themselves, and I'm able to help them with those decisions and they're not getting the success they want, well, now I'm able to help them even more, because you have to find out what it means to them. And then you have to dig down to see what they're really doing on a daily basis, whether it's what they eat, you know, the lifestyle they're living, you know, the amount of sleep they're getting, and, you know, all those things that essentially will affect the outcome of the hard work and the dedication that you're putting towards your performance.
Now, Mike, shifting back over to you on the high school side, just some background, Oak Park and River Forest. How would you explain the diversity of the socioeconomic model of the student body there that you have to coach?
Pretty unique. We have, you know, very diverse racially, very diverse socioeconomically. We have the richest of rich and the poorest of poor, and kids of all races and creeds, religions. Kids with two moms. We have kids with, you know what I mean, like, you know, so we're diverse in, you know, many ways. It's a great place. Very unique.
And that uniqueness does bring, obviously, you bring it in. You said you're richest of the rich, and they have different type of distractions versus the kids who might be lower income. And there's a complete, just it's across the spectrum, and it's also on both ends of the spectrum on what type of distractions, what type of things that kids at high school age can get into, whether there's the you know, the things that money can lead to, or the things that not having money can lead to. How have you been able to balance the gap, or go individually with a kid and be like, look, this is what you need to do, right? There are, you know, here's what you need to stay on course. And how much of your own personal experiences do you bring to each one of your athletes who has a completely different background from one to the other?
I think Andy really touched on something. You got to know your individual athletes and, you know, how to push their buttons and what motivates them and how they're motivated. And I think that's important, but we also preach a lot in general. And I, you know, obviously I can talk for a long time, you know, so the kids hear me talk a lot, and I tell them everything about me. I try to be as open and honest as possible. We really try to put things out there so that everything's on the table. You know, I feel like a lot of coaches won't go there, and I, you know, it probably works for some guys, where they won't talk about, you know, really deep personal things. But for some of our guys, you know, some of our guys don't need it, but some of them really do. And Devontae is a great, I'm bringing up Devontae Mahomes, the 174 pounder at Michigan, because Andy's on the phone. And, you know, Devontae walked off the mat in the middle of a dual meet and ran home in his shoes his sophomore year in high school. And by the time he was a senior, getting at the fact that he was, you know, very emotional and needy at the time, but by the time he was a senior, he was the absolute rock of our program. Everybody answered to him. He did everything right. He held it together in front of the guys, you know, even when he was feeling challenged. And so, you know, but that came from very personal stuff. But I think it also comes from you try to, like Andy kind of said, you try to build your leaders and build your culture and that type of stuff. In terms of our socioeconomic stuff and racially diverse stuff, obviously, there's different cultures have different things. You know, that's nuanced and very complicated. But we've been able to balance it in that we try to put everything on the table all the time. And you know, it's the precursor is, you know, we run a not a team but a family, and it's about love. And for that to happen, we need to kind of put your heart on your sleeve and tell people where you're at and how you feel. You know, and so that's all part of this whole, you know, me being very open about what really comes down to, you know, not having the balls to do the things that I wanted to do as a wrestler, that message, you know, where I'm putting myself out as being vulnerable, you know, hopefully resonates with the kids. And you know, all our coaches are on the same board with that stuff. We talk about vulnerability a lot and, you know, your fears and your wants and your needs. And then, you know, you're able to kind of tackle them a lot easier when things are out in front of you and clear. You know, I mean, there's so many teenagers who don't know how they feel. And Devontae was one of them. And, you know, after by his senior year, he could describe exactly how he felt before his matches, you know, what he was going through. And he owned his own, you know, kind of success in terms of his emotional development. And he's still working on it, you know, like we all are. But, you know, knowing yourself and being able to regulate yourself, I think, is real important for, you know, elite athletes. Future elite athletes.
Now, there's also another angle to this. Of course, we focused on maybe the negative type of distractions involving you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, maybe even some off the mat, outside of school type of things that aren't exactly healthy, depending on where you live. But they're also, you know, the generation of kids that are coming through now, and even I guess the millennials, so to speak. I'm actually above that age. I'm not considered a millennial, thankfully. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, you look at all the way we're digitally connected. I mean, there's distractions that can be negative in terms of your wrestling and your mindset that aren't necessarily about drugs and alcohol. They could be too much time playing Madden or Halo, too much time playing Candy Crush on your phone. I mean, Mike, dealing with all the with kids especially, how do you try to balance that type of distraction where this isn't something that, you know, it's not a you know, school hard knocks type of here's what I did, don't do it type of thing. So the kids are better with technology than the adults are. How do you get them to balance? It's like, all right, time to put the phone down. Time to, you know, you don't play Madden Xbox Live all night.
I'm glad you said that. And it's really, you know, it's really, obviously it's been around for a long time, but we battle it. And it's the same type. It's the same thing. Our guys are drug and alcohol free, almost to a man on our roster, where, you know, we're real hard about that stuff. Like you said, it doesn't mean that your lifestyle is necessary. You know, if you're sitting on your phone at midnight, you know, each night, you know, texting with girls or snap cyber chatting or whatever you're doing, you know what I mean? I'm joking. Of course I do. But, I tell the kids, cyber snap gram. I just gave a big talk to the kids about, like, your phone should be away from you. You know, I talked to them about the backlight in the phone and what it does to your REM. And when you don't, you know, ruin your REM, and when you don't have REM, you don't recover. And if you're serious about being, you know, the best you can be, then, you know, so the phones are big. And I think the other thing that I've identified is this kind of what I call the Kanye West culture, where it is cool to be as narcissistic as you possibly can be. And this culture, I think, is of youth is more not and technology breeds narcissism. You kind of sit there and you tell everybody how awesome you are over your computer or phone. You know what I mean? And you see these guys that are doing it now, and they're celebrated in the culture. You know, and so I think it's hard when you're narcissistic to be a great wrestler and really put things on the line. And so I talk to the kids all the time about being, you know, a real human. And you know, and teenage, you know, years kind of lends itself to that anyways, but I think it's worse now than it ever was, in terms of, you know, it's important to tell people how great you are. Well, when you're constantly telling everybody how great you are and it's time to actually put it on the line in a real match, it's extremely scary because, you might actually be exposed as a person who has flaws. You know what I mean? Maybe you're not the great champion of the world. Maybe you're just the second best champion of the world. You know what I mean? And so I think that really plays into performance and anxiety with the kids and, you know, the ability to compete at a high level. I think it's part of this kind of new generation and culture more so than it ever has. It's a very interesting thing. I've kind of been studying it now for years. And, you know, so we tell all our kids you're flawed, you know, like we all are. And let's all accept our flaws, and you know, that way we can know that, you know, the only thing that really matters is giving all you have, and you know, that type of stuff. Getting back to psychology of how to perform well.
Andy, your thoughts about like those digital distractions that obviously, again, kids and, you know, the people you're dealing with are also growing up in that same generation. What's it been like for you on that end dealing with those type of distractions?
Well, I did have the, you know, before I was even coaching, I had a distraction, and you can remember when, you know, Jake had his little fight on Facebook a long time ago with a young girl, and, you know, it's like, you know, you don't need to be letting people provoke you online because it doesn't matter, you know, and you could also spend a lot of time online, you know, worrying about, you know, the wrong things. And, you know, like, Mike said, you know, you put yourself out there, and then you wait and you see how people judge you. You know, and that's a distraction in itself. You know, Jordan Burroughs just had an article. I didn't get to read it, but he had an article talking about how, you know, Coach Manning, you know, challenged him to stay off social media before the World Championship so he could focus. But, you know, just like, you know, Mike said, you know, one of the things I always tell my athletes is that, you know, you can be on your phones and you can do certain things, but here's the science behind why I don't want you doing it during certain times. You know, leading up to 11 o'clock, you shouldn't be exposing yourself to screens because the blue light within televisions and phones, you know, that affects your melatonin production when you're trying to go to bed at 11 o'clock. If you have low melatonin, then you're not going to, like Mike said, you're not going to get into REM sleep as well. If you're not if you don't have that melatonin, you're also not producing testosterone. The only time your body produces testosterone is between the hours of 12 and 2. And so, you know, if you're on your screen and you're taking a time away from your body, ability to recover, then it's going to have a negative impact on it. But, you know, if they use it responsibly during the day and all that stuff, you know, I really don't see an issue unless, you know, they're so focused on what people are saying or, you know, how people are judging their posts and all that stuff, then it can be a distraction and, you know, cause problems.
Yeah, I want to circle back to that, what you had talked about with Jake, and just to give people backstory, we got to clarify that word younger. Okay, we're talking 20 years old, 1920, so it's you know, it was a kind of a relationship type of thing.
Yeah, it was. Jake was a six-year senior, and she was a freshman in college, and
yeah, so that actually led to maybe another side point with this technological thing is obviously the world. Mike, I'm guessing you probably deal with this a lot more, dealing with high school kids, and you're talking about the narcissism and how fragile emotions can be. Matter of fact, I think there was a South Park episode where they're talking about everything needed to be like a safe space or something like that, where, you know, online bullying, for example. This was a case with what we're talking about with Jake, where some people were creating a fake Facebook profile and basically antagonizing this person, and it caused a distraction mentally. And obviously the way the kids are, I mean, a lot of them are still learning how things should and shouldn't be. They should know better, you know, hey, right. Yeah, it's funny for a laugh, but you know, they're, you know, there's some things that equate to cyberbullying. How have you dealt with maybe those kids' reactions to the social media? I mean, I can think of one positive thing I saw. I mean, it was the clip with Alan Stallings just straight blast doubling on the football field. I actually retweeted and go, that's for confirmation. See, that's a positive type of social media response. But there are some things where, you know, everything you do is under the radar. If Tony Romo, you know, throws an interception, he hears about it all over Twitter from everybody who hates Tony Romo. High school kids are starting to have to deal with this too. How are you dealing with your kids and how to deal with that type of distraction?
We encourage them to really minimize their time on social media. And some guys do and some guys don't. But, you know, I think guys that are really focused, you know, it's not, you know, I think it's like a, you know, like a base values thing. Some guys are better at it than others. Maybe they've been, you know, you're raised with a dad that was on his phone all the time. Maybe, you know, you're on your phone all the time. But so I think it's different, you know, it varies. But you get the wrong, you know, Insta chat and you're emotional because of it. And like you said, you're kind of a teenager figuring out who you are. You know, maybe going to practice with a bad mindset, you know, and that's terrible. And now the opposite part of that is if Stallings watched that video a couple times, like you said, maybe it's good for him, but I'm sure he's seen it a few times.
Pretty beast tackle, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's nothing new for us. Stallings is a beast. But, you know, even at that, it's part of that, like, culture of, like, I'm going to, you know, he didn't make the Vine. One of his ex-teammates did. Great kid. You know, and obviously celebrating his teammate, but you know, it's like, again, you're either like social media is either propping yourself up or somebody propping you up or ripping you down. You know, it just doesn't seem to me like there's too much in between in the world of teenagers. You know what I mean? They're not really saying, hey, you know, went to the cousin's house, had a great dinner, you know, sriracha green beans. And you know what I mean? That's what, you know, 40-year-olds do on Facebook. You know, it's a lot about, it's very different. And I do think it's distracting. You know, I think like anything, it's, you know, can't be excessive with it, but I don't know where you draw the line. So we tell our guys to try to stay off. And now that you, Andy mentioned the Jordan Burroughs, who's a, you know, obviously a hero in our room, I'll be putting that article out and giving it out to a lot of kids. I'll be sending it to my guys in college, everything else. And I think drinking, drugs, social media, they're all symptoms of what is probably a bigger problem, and that's a lack of discipline and focus in your training. You know what I mean? But if you're aware of them, then maybe it's a little easier to not be distracted. So,
Andy, your thoughts as we close out?
Well, I mean, you know, just kind of like what Mike just said, that, you know, the drinking, drugs, social media, women, you know, they can be distractions. Like we talked about earlier, you just have to know what, you know, the athlete's, you know, goals for wanting to wrestle, wanting to go to school. So if you understand what their purpose is, you know, if they understand the purpose and you understand their purpose, then if you're making the wrong decisions and obsessing over, you know, some of those areas, you know, you could step in and you could say, hey, you know, like, you know, if wrestling's not your number one priority, but being a 4.0 student in the business school is, and you're still making the decisions and you're understanding why it's difficult to, you know, stay at the level of a 4.0 student in the business, well, it's because you're doing X, Y, and Z, and you have to put more of your focus into that. You know, each day, you know, we're limited not in the energy that we have. We're limited in the amount of choices that we make in the habits that we form. And, you know, you could, you know, help people by introducing new habits to eliminate some other bad habits, but you have to introduce the new habits, and there has to be a purpose and a reason why you're introducing those habits. And it also has to be able to relate to, you know, their end goal of, you know, what they want out of their 4 years of high school, what they want out of their 4 years of college. And then even more so when they get into a career, what do you want out of your career? Do you want, you know, to sit there and be an average employee? Do you want to be the best employee? Do you want to run the company? You know, so as long as you know what that goal is, it's easier to make the right choices, because the expectations are laid out for you. And by laying out those expectations, you know, the ramifications of making decisions, whether it be good or bad, or, you know, moderate decisions, you know. So, you know, it's just knowing what you want and knowing that what the expectations are, how to get there, and being a man and saying, you know, by making these decisions, this is how it's going to affect the outcome of where I want to go.
Mike, that was a pretty good explanation. You got anything else to add to that?
No. It was enlightening for me.
All right, Mike, you know, just give us some last words, maybe some other things that Andy didn't touch on that you've learned through your experience in coaching high school kids.
I don't think I have anything new. You know, I think best practices in coaching are time-tested things, so I don't think I have anything that's going to blow anybody away, JB.
Been talking with Mike Powell and Andy Rovat here on episode 22 of the World Wrestling Resource podcast. You can get all the information about World Wrestling Resources at worldwrestlingresource.com. This show is part of the Mat Talk Podcast Network. I'd like to thank you for listening and subscribing. Please rate and review on iTunes by simply going to www.mattalkonline.com.
Is part of the Mat Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MatTalkOnline.com.